This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
May I go to the toilet?
No.
But I
think it's better that you stay by my feet and continue doing what I asked you to do.
I've always felt that, you know, it doesn't matter who you fall in love with.
Basic human rights should apply to all people, including gay people.
Hi, I'm Emma Caulfield.
And I'm Amber Benson.
And you're listening to Sci-Fi
and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This is Sonia for Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. And we're reviewing and looking at a film by Peter Strickland, of course, The Duke of Burgundy. It's a 2014 British drama film written and directed by Strickland, and it has screened at various film festivals, including Toronto, London Film Festival, Rotterdam, has had amazing critical acclaim as well. And of course, we probably know Peter Strickland, well from his film, the runaway hit a few years back in 2012, Barbarian Sound Studio. Considered a horror film of sorts, but it's more of a psychological sort of trippy drama in a way. It was the second feature film from this British Greek director, and he did the screen play adaptation as well. It starred Toby Jones in this psychological thriller set in an Italian horror film studio, or Giallo studio, in the 1970s. Yes, fascinating film. I hope people went along and saw that. And of course, his first film was A Catalan Vaga, made back in 2009, his directorial debut set in Transylvania. So he certainly is quite an eclectic, interesting man and has a real sense of atmosphere and design. And he does remind me quite a bit of Ben Wheatley and co., of course, responsible for things like Kill List, Sightseers, more recently A Field in England, and his partner, spouse Amy Jump. They worked together on Wheatley's films. She's pretty much the power behind, I guess, the man, so to speak. It has that very similar sensibility, and they're approximately the same age, very close in age. Of course, Sightseers is amazing. Kill List was an absolute mind blower. High Rise is coming. But back to Strickland's The Duke of Burgundy. The Duke of Burgundy is, of course, produced by Andy Stark. He's worked before. It stars Cissi Ababette Knudsen, the Danish actress. And, of course, it's seen a return of young actress Chiara Diana, the Italian actress, returning. She had a small part in Barbarian Studio as a voice actress, but she's returning in one of the main roles. It's all about women, basically. So what is The Duke of Burgundy about? Well, a very interesting film indeed. The performances are amazing. It's basically, it ticks all the Alison Bechdel / Wallace boxes very easily, because there are only females in it. There are only women in this film. There are no men. There are no men in the background. There are no male extras. There are no male characters of any sort. It's completely women. And just a handful of women, and of course just two main characters. Now, of course, Cissi Ababette Knudsen plays Cynthia, and Chiara Diana plays Evelyn. And what is it all about? Well, it has been called the 50 Shades of Grey for lesbians or queer women, but like so many other reviewers or ones that I've looked at, we have the same feeling, takeaway from the film. It's not really about lesbianism at all. It's kind of queer because there are two women in a relationship that is quite, I guess, ventures on towards something like sadomasochistic. But as far as sexuality goes, it's almost like that's not even important, that that's not the takeaway that you get from it, and it's not necessarily the thing that the director's focusing on. Now, it is quite mysterious. It does have a real sense of the 1970s once again, and of course it has that otherworldly kind of aspect. You're not really sure what era it is, but there's a soft focus, a lot of that, and a lot of nature. We see a woman played by, of course, main actress there, Cissi Ababette Knudsen. We see her as an older woman, middle-aged woman, but of course very attractive, studying her lepidopterology. Lepidopterology, of course, study of moths, and I guess you could say. She has an obsession with it. It's a branch of entomology concerning the scientific study of moths, and of course, the three superfamilies, if you didn't know this, and butterflies. So yeah, look, it's intriguing. And we have this theme running all the way through the film of this mysterious and yet very magnetizing, and it certainly draws your attention, the idea of moths. Moths play the motif and symbols all the way through the film. We see sort of slow, almost rotoscope images of moths flying in blackness towards a light. We see a suffusion of light and darkness in the interiors of the home that they're staying in, where Cynthia and Evelyn play out these bizarre but intriguing role between themselves, where one partner is more dominant over the other. And seemingly, Cynthia is. She's the more dominant, so it seems, the older woman. But looks can be deceiving, a little bit like a pupae or a cocoon of a butterfly or moth. If you were to come across a pupae or a cocoon, you probably wouldn't know that out of that dormantness, out of that chrysalis comes a butterfly or moth. A complete alien wouldn't understand that. And it feels a bit like we're watching something absolutely alien to our normal day-to-day lives. Which makes me think it's not really queer after all. But in any case, with the wonderful suffusion of the music, it is so haunting and tender. The music by Cat's Eyes, an interesting duo, an alternative pop duo. We have vocalist Faris Badwan, who's worked in bands like The Horrors, and an Italian-Canadian soprano and composer Rachel Zafira. So we've got these two people playing against each other, and Cat's Eyes is very reminiscent of, say, a 1970s giallo film, or, strangely, a female exploitation movie, something about initiation and a journey. It has got that feeling of Salo, but without the incredible, painful violence in it. Certainly doesn't have that kind of violence.
But yes, that design is a lot more popular. And because of the spring, it's easy to lift up. With both designs, there's a lock at each end of the bed. But even without those, the weight of one's lover sleeping on top means that's almost impossible to escape.
And
I can also add metal hooks to the inside, if you like having your hands and feet tied to something.
That sounds perfect.
It would just be nice if you volunteered to rub my back.
Sorry. I didn't know you needed anything.
Well, you can see that I'm in pain.
Well, it's not exactly inspiring to see you dressed like that.
Good thing you're not a doctor, then.
That's really some look you've there. Even the trams are less shabby. I started to wonder why I bothered buying you a whole wardrobe.
I need an instruction manual to get into half of the things you buy me. I would just like to feel comfortable, thank you very much.
Now, I'm giving up too much away at this stage, but when you've got a cinematographer like Nick Noland, who of course has worked before with Peter Strickland in the past, he's definitely got an eye for retro and the understanding of light and dark, natural looking colours. Everything's got this autumn glow because we're talking about the seasons. In the winter time, of course, the pupae, the cocoon chrysalis is dormant underneath the earth for the moth. And then, of course, spring comes and things come to the surface as they do in this film. And you're just wondering what the heck is going on here. So Evelyn's studying moths, basically, and butterflies and the behaviour of which and the sound of which. And Evelyn's romantically involved with her. She's a maid, or is she? She seems to be cleaning all the time. She's hand cleaning underwear, taking the marks and the stains out of Cynthia's underwear. And Cynthia rigorously checks in on her about it. And if she basically hasn't done a good job, well, she's punished, of course. We don't actually see a lot of the punishments themselves, but one, of course, can imagine what goes on behind the closed bathroom door when we hear the sounds of her running liquid. Well, you hear the sounds of running water or liquid, but you can imagine what that is when she asks, of course, Evelyn to lie down. Right, so, yes, this isn't exactly the kind of movie that you would say take someone on a date. Probably not. It's pretty intense in many parts, and we see these personalities and we just don't know who is dominant, who is on top, basically. But of course we see Cynthia falters in her dominance, and it's becoming apparent through the film that Evelyn's actually in charge. That's the twist, spoiler. But she seems to be in charge, and this takes hold of the viewer when we find out that has ordered or wants to order a special trunk that will be concealed underneath the bed, the double bed that Evelyn wants this trunk to be made especially for her to lie in, to be bound and lying in, so she's underneath her lover, so actually under the mattress. So yes, they get someone in to take measurements of Evelyn, and she's very excited, but it doesn't work out the way they plan when the actual box to be made is not able to be made in only 2 weeks before Evelyn's birthday. And things sort of go awry after that. There's lots of long still shots, there's lots of stationary shots and doorway shots, and it gives you the sense of claustrophobia because they're in the house itself a lot of the time. And of course, all over the walls we see encased butterflies, moths. You know, the lepidopterology is everywhere abounding as she studies at Cynthia, the older woman. So what is going on? One scene which was quite amusing, they're at a lecture, I don't know where, and I spotted mannequins, female mannequin shapes in the audience of the lecture that Cynthia and Evelyn go to. And they go and hear the lecture of another woman. And there seems to be some sort of connection between a woman wearing high boots, leather boots, and there's this whole dominant thing or dominatrix thing of cleaning the boots. But I won't give that away too much. Yes, yeah, some of the dialogue is pretty interesting. Kind of borderline, just trashy. But then it takes a real turn, and you finally go from sort of sniggering and chuckling under your breath to really, really feeling for these characters, to really getting an understanding and getting under their skin or chrysalis or under their wings, that there's more to it, you know, there's something else. It's got a Lynchian feel in that respect. Seems to be a lot of a homage to David Lynch there. It goes a lot deeper than those exploitative films from the 70s, and the laughs sort of stop when you realise that Cynthia, the older woman, is actually not into the game anymore. This orchestrated game of Evelyn's, she's just not buying it anymore. And there seems to be a tension there as, of course, Cynthia's back starts to play up. And it seems Evelyn is in charge. She doesn't want to rub her back. She starts to refuse and reject Cynthia. And she even starts to dominate her more and more by saying, I want you to do it like this. I want you to punish me, and so on and so on. There's a few double vision effects which are very sort of camp and, you know, very retro when it comes to sexual scenes. There's a cunnilingus scene, which we don't see close up, but we can just imagine, in a darkened room. And there is a moment there where we look between Cynthia, the older woman's legs. The camera goes into the dark patch between her legs, but we don't see any great detail. Instead, we suddenly have images of moths and butterflies flying across the screen. I think this is a film you want to see on a bigger screen. Sadly, I saw it as a screener. But on a bigger screen, you get to see, I guess, the panorama of it, the change of season in the leaves, the sort of environment. It's got that classical kind of Italian or Tuscan or French tucked away sort of villa feel to it. And there is a neighbor called Lorna who never speaks. She's mute and she's always hanging out. I don't know, they look like rugs and beating rugs and so on. So it's got this classic old world feel to it. Yes, look, I'm intrigued by this director. I love to be mystified by a film. I really do. And I love to see something that's been made lovingly and beautifully made and composed. I also love to see a kind of tension and mystery, even in performances. And it sometimes feels a little bit like maybe the actors aren't too sure what's going on themselves, but not in a bad way, not in an unprofessional way, but in a really interesting journey for that actor. And the performances are wonderful. They are beautiful women, both of them, very stunning and attractive looking, particularly Knudsen. I'm like going, where has she been all my life? No, she's an incredible looking woman and holds herself so well. I can see that her career could very potentially take off here, as of course the lovely and sweet and demure seeming, of course, Chiara Di Anna. But is she demure? Maybe she's not so innocent and sweet after all. She's kind of like a little bird, and you just get this feeling that she's weak. But underneath that, she's not so weak. Not so weak at all. Now, it's only her second film, which is amazing considering. Chiara Di Anna, only her second film. And she studied geology, so, you know, she's obviously very smart and interesting background. And now she's tried, of course, acting and very physical theatre she's been involved in. So it's going to be an interesting future for her and, of course, for the older actress and definitely, I would say, more experienced Danish actress, Cindy Babette Knudsen. But I would suggest that, yes, their careers could be something to watch. And it's interesting to have two people who aren't born English players up. Speakers speaking English, you get that lilting accent, and you get it. It's a very interesting angle to take a film to use two non-English speaking by origin actresses, very European flavour, a really nice style, and brings something different to the film. It's definitely slow paced, and with that marvellous soundtrack that I mentioned from Cat's Eyes, it's mesmerising. I would suggest that, yeah, look. The lead song is incredible. It just will hook you, capture you. Coat of Arms, it's called. And at 2 minutes 48, It's a divine little song with the melodies are so beautiful. Reminding me a little bit of Julie Cruz. Again, a hint of Lynchian mystery and something going on. Always something going on behind the scenes there. Well, it was released basically back in September of last year at TIFF and then earlier in the UK in February. It's been on release here for a couple of weeks, but a very limited exclusive release at Nova, for example, in Carlton and here in Melbourne. And it runs for just another week or so. So you haven't got that much time to see it, but I suggest if you get a chance to, the Duke of Burgundy won't let you down. It's not as swimmingly kind of bad taste as 50 Shades of Grey, definitely not. And it's certainly been called a feminist film. I can imagine that. It's had a Rotten Tomatoes 93% rating out of 72 reviews. That's pretty damn good, 8 out of 10. Been called stylish, sensual and smart. And the Duke of Burgundy proves that erotic cinema can have genuine substance. So yes, pretty good at Metacritic weighing out of 100 reviews. It's getting a 7 out of 10. It's pretty good. The film won the Grand Jury Prize at the Philadelphia Film Festival last year. It's doing really well, and we do wish Peter Strickland all the best. I think him and Ben Wheatley are turning out to be two of my favourite new era of British directors. So yes, head along, see The Duke of Burgundy if you get a chance. It only runs for 104 minutes, and it will engage you and certainly draw you in, I believe. I believe Madman Films will be hopefully distributing it a bit later this year, and it's out through Rook Films, Film 4, and Ripken Productions, distributed by Artificial Eye overseas. So yes, it stars Sitsi Babett-Knudsen as Cynthia, Chiara Di Anna as Evelyn, the maid. Music by Cat's Eye, cinematography by Nick Noland, edited by Matthias Fichetti, produced by Andy Stark, and written and directed by Peter Strickland of Barbarian Sound Studio. I'm Sonia the Screamer. It's not a horrifying film or story by any means. It's a mystery film. It's a sensual delight, erotic in parts, surprising, sort of makes you gulp, makes you think, makes you get a little bit of goosebump and a little bit of bristle of the hair arm or arms on the hair. And at the same time, it's deeply romantic. It's a love story. And yes, there just happen to be two women. This is Sci-Fi and Scream talking about Duke of Burgundy. I'm giving this film out of 5, a 4. 4 out of 5 from me, the Screamer. Many thanks goes to distributor Madman Entertainment Australia, and to Nova Cinema in Carlton for the chance to see and review Peter Strickland's The Duke of Burgundy. You have been listening to Sci-Fi and Scream with Sonia the Screamer here on Joy 94.9.
Oh. This is Michael and Peter Spierig.
And you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hi, my name is Madeline Olmec. I'm the director of the Foxy Merkins, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Sarah Lamberg. You might know me as a lesbian cannibal, or sometimes a delusional life-drawing model, or perhaps a neurotic people pleaser. That's right, I'm an actor and director, and this is Sci-Fi and Scream.
This is Matthew A. Brown, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on 94.9.
Hi, this is Erin Gray from Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.